Welcome to the Eastman Financial Report. This is Dan Eastman, your host. We are broadcasting from planet Earth today on WVW-TV. Today is Thursday, August 24th, 2023. And it's supposed to be the dog days of summer and the last gasps of August, where everybody who's important in money is on like on Long Island's beaches right now. But there's still plenty of news to be had in the world today. So I'd like to share some of that news with you. Thank you for tuning in. It's always a pleasure to have you on WVW-TV. It's been a wonderful run for this network. Of course, we've been around since 2006, bringing you programming that we believe is very insightful. It allows us to express our personal opinions as to the economy and political stuff and everything else. So thank you so much for tuning in. We really appreciate it. As you know, if you've watched my show in the past, we're not a commercial network. We don't sell commercials, so you're not going to be having your viewing interrupted by a commercial today. But we would like to thank our sponsors, because our network does run on sponsorships and viewer donations and other means of financing. And it's very important to us as we continue our mission of bringing you different viewpoints of the news. And of course, my sponsor is Swiss America Trading Corporation, based out of Arizona. It's an American company, but they, as I like to say, are a fine purveyor of precious metals. And what I mean by that is that they make a market in tangible metals. So if you are an individual investor and you're thinking about ways to diversify, you might be thinking about investing some money in tangible precious metals. And what you see on the screen here is a very common way of people all over the world, basically, to purchase bits of gold and silver and even platinum. And the idea being that you would buy these coins to preserve the spending power of your money. You transfer it out of inflation deteriorating dollars or euros or whatever, and you buy into a tangible metal, which would, the theory is that it would preserve your wealth, your purchasing power going forward. And that's why a lot of people like to buy these types of bullion coins, because the bullion coins are minted by governments around the world. We've got the American Eagle, like you see here, that's Lady Liberty walking, and the Canadians and the Austrians and the Australians and the South Africans and the Chinese, everybody mints, not everybody, but many governments mint bullion coins because it's a convenient way for their citizens and globally to hold precious metals. Like, we're in America here, obviously, and we can buy Canadian maple leaves, or we can buy South African Krugerrands, or we can buy Austrian Philharmonics. And Swiss America Trading, of course, makes a market in those. So if you'd like more information on how you can invest some of your hard-earned earnings into tangible metals and whether it's right for you to begin with, they'll send you some free investor information. So give them a call at 1-800-519-6271, or go to the website and use the promo code Eastman for Eastman Financial Report, as you saw it here. Type that in and they'll be happy to send you free investor information that explains the whole world of investing in tangible metals and the risks, of course. There's always risks in investing in anything, and the benefits. So if you're interested in learning more about investing in gold or silver or platinum, give them a call or reach out to them on the website, and they'll be happy to send you information. You can buy precious metals in various and sundry sizes and shapes. What you're seeing right here is our bullion coins, and we think of that as a one-ounce coin traditionally, which means each one of those will have an ounce of gold or silver or platinum. You can also get a half ounce or a tenth of an ounce, however they're minted. But again, it's a recognizable product minted by a government in a government mint. And the quality of the gold and the content of the gold is backed by the reputation of that government. So if the Canadian government or the American, U.S. government says that it's an ounce of gold at a certain purity, within that coin, there will be exactly an ounce of gold at that purity. And perhaps they'll add some base metal to or like an alloy to make the coins more robust or more durable. But even though, and of course some do, and some, different countries do it different ways, but rest assured there's always 1 ounce of gold in that coin at a certain purity, plus the alloys. And that's backed by the reputation of the government that minted it. So that's a way for you to invest in precious metals if you're interested. And again, you have to do your homework. And certainly not for everyone, and you shouldn't just jump in because these are difficult markets. And of course, the value of these coins or this bullion is always pegged to the dollar, and it's not a simple market to understand. So that's why you want to get the information and read it so that you have confidence. You can also, as you see here, these are gold bullion bars, and you can get them in larger sizes. So if a 1 ounce coin isn't enough for you and you don't want a pocket full of coins, you can buy a whole brick of gold, not cheap, but you can certainly buy it. And when you do, you would want to buy from a trusted vendor who understands the people who make bullion like this are called they're processing metal into bullion, and the companies that do that are very old companies, and they refine metal into gold or bars. And effectively, you'd want to be trusting that the product you're buying is what it's meant and what it's represented to be. And that's why you'd want to deal with a dealer who has a strong reputation. And there's nobody in the space better than Swiss America, because they've been in it a long time. So again, give them a call or go, 1-800-519-6271. Go to their website, use the promo code Eastman for Eastman Financial Report, and then they will, they'll send you the information. There's also something else they're sending out that's free, and you really ought to get yourself a copy. They're doing a report called the Secret War on Cash, and I've talked about this before, but as money becomes digital, and it's in a, it's in your checking account, but the money comes in digital and it goes out digital, and you don't really have a paper check or dollar bills anymore. There's a strong movement occurring where they want to give everybody in the world a wallet from your central bank, and that's your personal wallet, and your money will all be in that wallet. And that sounds like a great idea, because who wouldn't love to have a checking account with the Federal Reserve Bank of the United States? Well, nobody does, because it's the bank, central bank, that banks the bankers. So, your checking account's at the local bank in town, but that bank's checking account is at the Fed. Well, now they want to move everybody to the Fed, which begs the question, what happens to all the big banks, the savings and loans? It may become redundant. The whole industry will disappear. You'll have one giant, Federal Reserve. Everybody will have a wallet. And this is all for political debate in the future. Nobody's proposing this, but this is what's coming down the pipe. And that report talks about that. And the big risk is, for the first time in history, if the government has your wallet, the government can tell you how to spend your money. And that is a real fear for individual liberty. Because if the government doesn't want you buying a great big gas-guzzling pickup truck, your money won't work for that purchase, okay? And the only place you can have money in the world is in your Fed wallet, but there will be no more pickup trucks, because there will be no more money available, because they pollute, okay? The same thing with, I like to drink a can of soda once in a while, I'm mentioning names, but there's too much sugar in that, and the government will look at me and they'll say, cut them off, no more cans of soda for you. So the point is, we will lose our individual ability to make our own buying choices, and that's a very serious problem in a free economy, a horrible problem. In the Soviet economy, it was sort of kind of the same thing. People had rubles, but they restricted your ability to purchase by keeping the store shelves empty. Well, in a free economy that's controlled by the government, you can have the store shelves just chock-a-block full of stuff. But, if you vote the right way or believe the right things, then you can go and shop and live a nice life. But if you tend to vote or think contrary to the government, then perhaps you will be left with a bag of rice and a bottle of water. That's the big fear. So give them a call, 1-800-519-6271, and ask them for a copy of that report. They'll mail it out to you. But get yourself up to speed on this idea of central bank digital currency, because in the history of mankind, the government has never been able to keep people from buying what they want to buy. Now, they can make certain products illegal to buy, and that's a different thing. If you make the personal choice to buy something that is illegal to buy, let's say like marijuana or something, well, it's illegal to do that, but you have the free ability to do it. You took the risk and you end up in the clink, but that will not happen in a digital economy. So that's why this is an important article, and it's an important issue, and you want to be thinking about that as you go through life. Okay, let's jump into the financial news. Today is a big day in Jackson Hole, Wyoming. And of course, most of us think of Jackson Hole, Wyoming as a wonderful place to go skiing because it's got quite a ski hill and a wonderful reputation. It's a great ski resort. I remember a million years ago when I was in college, that was a wonderful destination to go skiing. And it was a very, very, very fine place. Well, today in the middle of summer, the skiing's not so good in August in Jackson Hole, but the Federal Reserve has put together its annual economic symposium in Jackson Hole. And of course, that's where all of the smartest of the smart economists get together to basically look at the economy, figure out what to do, and prognosticate, and maybe cook up a few plans. Well, we had today the president of the Federal Reserve Bank of Boston opined publicly that, and keep in mind, when the Federal Open Market Committee meets, it's the seven governors that are appointed by the president to 15-year terms, confirmed by the Senate, and the president of the New York Federal Reserve. That person's always in the club because that's the important Federal Reserve Bank. The rest of these local regional banks, they rotate membership. And when that group of 12 gets together to jack up the interest rates, there's only, I think there were four regional presidents and the New York and then the seven from Washington. So anyway, one of the non-voting members, which is the Federal Reserve in Boston, she opined that more rate hikes are needed, and there's a probability that they ought to keep those rates elevated for a long period of time to crush inflation. And of course, you know, that caught the ear of people in the financial media, because here you have your Federal Reserve president who's not on the FOMC this year because it rotates, but she, in her opinion, and you don't get to be a Federal Reserve, you know, president by accident. I mean, these are wise people with, you know, economics backgrounds and all sorts of expertise, but really front leading the story that the inflation rate is still too high. And therefore, the rates may need to go higher, and we may need to keep them high longer to squeeze that economy down to get that inflation out of the economy. If you tuned in the last 2 days, I've been asking this question. Now, what's the difference between the 3% now and the 2% benchmark? And who set the benchmark? And how was it 2%? And if it was set back in the 1930s during a deflationary depression, perhaps 2% is too low. I mean, how do you know, is 2% too low? Is 3% better? We all would probably agree that 9% is kind of up there. But who makes that, you know, that fine tune? And of course, that's what they're doing in Jackson Hole this week, is having the very same discussion. There will be people saying, hey, you know, 3 is close enough. And, you know, here's the lady from Boston saying, oh, we got to crank this tighter. But let's think about what that does. And I threw my viewer call over the weekend and said, you know, you're talking about a rising tide floats all boats, and you seem to be pro-inflation. I said, well, you know, yeah, I maybe sound like I'm pro-inflation because from a perspective of tangible assets versus dollars, there's a thought that how do you get out of $32 trillion in debt? Especially with interest rates going up, and you know, the Federal Reserve is now paying 4.35, whatever, pick a number, 4 point something, that the only politically palatable way, the only feasible way to get out from under the burden of that type of debt overhang is through an inflationary model. And of course, inflation has big blowout risk. I mean, it's a funny thing, and that's what I want to talk about today, because the lady from Boston, the Federal Reserve president from Boston, is very concerned about inflation and squeezing that out of the economy. So I'm thinking to myself, why is she saying that? And that's part of the critical thinking component of looking at the financial world. I mean, there's a lot of vested interests, and everybody has their opinion. And the loudest voices, of course, will persuade the most people. And you can move markets, and you can move, you know, cultural philosophy. You can move the needle if you can get your message out to enough people. And that's why when somebody of this stature says something, and wow, I better dig into it. But what we know, what we think we know right now is 3% inflation. We're all jabbering 3% because that seems to be an easy number to say. But if you take out food and energy costs, which are more volatile, Then this core inflation is running at 4%. So, okay, well, if it's not food and energy, energy means home heating or cooling, and gasoline for your car, diesel for your trucks, and of course, we all know what food is. So at the end of the day, it must be clothing, entertainment, maybe, I don't know, I suppose cars are in there, the durable goods, that sort of thing, still running along at 4%. And what is really becoming interesting about this debate is the impact of the Fed's actions. We think, the impact on America, and I like to use the great metaphor of pulling the punch bowl away just as the party's getting started, which is what the Fed does to try and suppress the economy because they don't want the economy blown out of control and, just exceeding and then triggering inflation. So the whole idea is if we can keep employment stable, prices stable, and everybody's making money and being happy, that's a good thing. And we had that. We very much had that from the Ronald Reagan era of 1980 when they crushed inflation of the 1970s, which was nobody's fault yet everybody's fault with two things: the disconnecting of the dollar from gold, which a burst of inflation, and then the energy crisis in the 1970s. So we have this very flat economy that everything was just good and everything was up and everybody was making money, and the economy was pretty darn healthy from the 1980s right up until about 2008, and that was triggered primarily by excessive greed within the housing market, creating liar loans that fueled more money into the housing market that should have gone in, which triggered housing inflation, which meant bigger mortgages, which meant more risk. And when the mortgage pools hit a risk metric that was dangerous to investors, the lid blew off. And that's basically what happened. So I guess the question is, if we want to break it down, we have basically three kinds of people in America. I mean, this is always dangerous to generalize and put people into cubbyholes because there's always some guy that doesn't fit in the cubbyhole. But let's just say for a moment, there are three kinds of people in America, okay? Kind of naive statement. But there are poor people. These are people who have low incomes and they don't own assets. They may own a rusty car or they may own, a big screen TV, but they rent. They don't own property. And their income is low, and they're very, very, very much impacted by inflationary pressures, because if you don't own property, you pay rent, and rent goes up as landlords are looking at higher mortgage rates and higher expenses. They jack up the rent. I mean, everybody knows. If you ever, back in the day, we're all renters when we were young. And you're kind of caught in this situation where the landlord sends you a letter. Oh, by the way, your rent's going up another $300 a month. And you're like, oh my gosh, where am I going to get $300 a month? I'll have to find a cheaper place. So that means you're running around looking for a cheaper place to rent. And, that's a lot of stress, a lot of burden. And you find a cheaper place to rent and you sign the lease. And a year later, they jack the rent up. You're caught. You're really caught in this matrix of basically you're subject to food inflation, clothing inflation, housing inflation, automobile inflation, and low income. So inflation is a very, very bad thing if you're in that box. And that box in America, very sadly, is large. There are a lot of poor people who rent their dwelling place, and inflation is a really big deal. They're on fixed income or small income, prices go up, and when that happens, their economic world shrinks, and it's painful. It causes domestic problems, it causes individual problems, not to mention economic problems. It's a bad place to be. So I'm thinking when the Federal Reserve president from Boston is focused on, we gotta shut this inflation down, I think she's thinking about that segment of the population. And there's nothing wrong with that thought. I mean, that's logical, rational thought. She looks at the world, and now I assume the president of the Federal Reserve Bank of Boston is not low income living in an apartment somewhere. I mean, I'd probably make a pretty good buck being Federal Reserve president, but her constituency. I mean, she goes out, she looks out the window and looks out over Boston. And I love Boston. It's a wonderful city. And she sees a lot of poor people in rented housing, and she's thinking, man, we got to shut this inflation down because this is hurting a lot of people, and it is. Okay, so that's her perspective. The second silo or class of people in America are what we would refer to traditionally as the middle class. Okay, it's always fun to be in the middle, isn't it? You don't want to be poor. We'd all love to be rich, but you know, we're all stuck in the middle here. And what, basically how you define that is somebody in the United States who is middle class has traditionally been able to afford a single family home, and they have a paycheck high enough to pay the mortgage off. They probably don't have the capital to go out and buy a house for cash. Maybe some do. They probably have upper middle class people. But at the end of the day, these are people who have a boat in the harbor, okay? They own a house. And they have assets. They probably have a job, and they contribute to maybe a 401k plan, and money is set aside and it gets invested in the market, and you hope it goes up. And from that perspective, the middle class perspective, inflation is not as big a deal. Now, I suppose if it got to be 25% a week and, you know, grocery prices were going through the roof, that would be bad. But we're not there. We were at 9%. Now we're down to 3%. And what has happened is the aggressiveness of the Federal Reserve raising the rates has the effect of raising mortgage rates. And we now know the story here. I think they're 22-year high on mortgage interest. So if you're a middle class person and your job holds, you don't lose your job. You lose your job, you're in trouble. You get huge medical bills on a terrible illness, you're in trouble. But let's say you got a job, maybe a spouse, there's two incomes coming in, you got a house. You probably have a fixed mortgage. If you were prudent, you'd have a fixed mortgage, probably not a variable mortgage. And when inflation goes up, your housing value goes up. And it's, remember, if you live in a $500,000 house, it's 3% of the $500,000. You know, I mean, that starts to look like, we call it the wealth effect. Basically, back in, you know, economic theory, it's the wealth effect. When you feel that your assets are worth up more, and that's unearned money. I mean, if you live in a, $500,000 house in the suburbs, and your house goes up 10%, you know, well, that's good. That's $50,000, and you know, you don't have to pay taxes on it because you haven't sold your house. It's not, you know, declared income, but a realized income. But you know, that's $50,000 just for sitting here being, you know, I mowed the lawn, and $50,000. So your perspective is different, and of course, you know, you're not. Unless you had to refinance your house and, you know, move somewhere, you're sitting pretty basically, and the value of your property is going up. And of course, if you have investments in a 401k and they are invested in equity, you know, I know the bond market's been a little, you know, remember, as interest rates go up, bond values go down. So bondholders really got whacked last year, but they're getting less whacked this year. And if the stock market keeps going up, well, you know, inflation's not so bad because equities have done better in inflation because companies are pass-throughs. You know, revenues minus expenses is earnings, and that's earnings value. The earnings drives the share price, theoretically. So as companies, if they're able to increase revenue because of inflation, you know, they sell the same number of goods, units of goods, but for a higher price, oh, the revenue went up. And then you manage your costs. That middle sector benefits from inflation. Of course, when they go to the grocery store, they're paying the same $8 for eggs that the poor section does. But at the end of the day, there is much less concern on the part of that middle section about inflation. So inflation's not really looked at with the same critical eye. And I think that you'll see that in some Federal Reserve presidents. They're saying, you know, inflation's, you know, it's probably a good thing, or, you know, or at least it's not, because it depends on their constituency and who they're looking at, and the impact. All right, now let's take the third section. This is this growing section of Americans where none of this matters. It just doesn't matter. They make so much money that it doesn't matter if eggs are $8. Because, you know, they have so much money, they don't even have $8 in like the couch cushion. That's, you know, it's not relevant. So from an inflationary perspective, there is no hurt be careful because you invested in the wrong thing as a billionaire, like guys who own commercial real estate, they're getting killed right now. But let's say you're Bill Gates, and I'll pick on Bill Gates. If he owns, zillions of acres of farmland in the United States, okay, and big mansions all over the place, man, inflation is Bill Gates' best friend, and it's just this is not of any interest to him at all, other than, of course, you have to put on the facade of saying, oh, I care about the poor people, let's cut inflation. But the chap that bought the house on Long Island for $52 million, you know, $52 million for a 100-year-old house, that's a lot of money. So in that silo, the rich are just cleaning house with inflation. And that's why I think you look at the poor people who are really impacted by inflation. You look at the middle class who's hanging on by their fingernails, because that middle class in America has been shrinking. I mean, people are falling off the edge. And once you fall off the edge, you have only your education that will allow you to pull yourself back. And it's a lot of tough work. And of course, some people in the middle class fall off the other side, and they too become the wealthy class. So when you look at the actions of the Federal Reserve in frantically trying to get the inflation rate down, there's the underlying current is that what they're doing is trying to keep the least well-off Americans from going berserk. I mean, you basically will find yourself in an inflationary environment where you will be destroyed. And that's the political push to basically flatten inflation. What it's doing is it's not affecting the rich, because you know what? Bill Gates doesn't care if it's 1% inflation or 10% inflation. It doesn't matter to him. The middle class is the real ping pong ball, because that is the class that gets crushed. And that's why we look at these housing starts. You know, people are trying to get, you know, the millennials, they got kind of schnookered into the wrong deal. You know, live in an apartment, it's down the street from the coffee shop and the restaurants, you can walk everywhere and you'll own nothing and be happy. You don't have a car, you take the transportation on your phone. They're waking up to the fact that the train's leaving the station, these are intelligent people with high paying jobs and came from backgrounds where they probably all grew up in single family homes. And what they're frantically trying to do is stampede into that silo. And the question is, you know, under this policy, 7% interest, they're paying a dear price for it. Well, anyway, I'm out of time today. Thank you so much for tuning in. Look forward to talking to you again soon. And have a great day. Bye.